Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something awakens imagination, empowers storytellers, and connects the Missoula community through the transformative power of personal storytelling. It is a celebration of each other, our stories, and how we move through the world together. All of the stories at Tell Us Something are true. Stories last for 10 minutes and are told from memory. Everyone is welcome to tell a story. The Missoula community comes together for a night of true personal stories, shared live, focused on a theme. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This episode of the Tell Us Something podcast was recorded in front of a live audience on September 11th, 2015, at the Denison Theater at the University of Montana in Missoula, Montana, as part of the Montana Book Festival. There was no theme for this event. This episode comes to us from Chris Latray and is titled, If You Don't Ask, You Can't Hear Yes, or Wolf Watching with John Valiant. Thank you for listening.
I am massively unprepared for this. I prepared to be prepared. I have a studio downtown and I laid out the nice jeans I have and the one nice shirt I have with this plan that I'd go there before this and take a shower and become presentable because I knew I was going to be on the road, and I was on the road, didn't have time to do that. So, you know, I looked like the dude who's been up for 2 days because that's pretty much who I am right now. I've got food stains right here because we've been eating in the car for 2 days. And I realized, you know, Mark said that I had done a Tell Us Something before, and that was in February of 2013, which was, you know, a year and a half ago. And if you look at the photographs of that performance, I'm wearing this same fucking shirt. A year and a half ago, it was this shirt. It's like, this has been my go-to shirt for at least 2 years. And sitting there was kind of humiliating. The thing is I don't really know. I'm kind of torn between a couple stories that I wanted to tell, just like I told Mark would probably be the situation when the night came. But I've kind of changed gears on what I originally planned in my preparation to be prepared as to what I was going to talk about, just kind of based on like the last 36 hours. And I would say that for some reason, I'm feeling very emotional right now. I'm kind of verklempt almost. But I would say that the groundwork was laid exactly 10 years ago today, which, this really isn't a big deal. For some reason, I'm just kind of uptight about it. 10 years ago today was the day my girlfriend then, wife now, arrived here. We pulled up in a moving van, dumped everything out into our house. 10 years later, that's a story that's still going, that's really working out well for me. And like I said, I was going to be flipping about it, but you know, no sleep and a lot of driving will kind of make you a little raw. And I think the events of the last day and a half started there, you know, kind of based on something that she told me a couple weeks ago. I don't know if she read it somewhere or if she heard it on the internet somewhere or read it there or whatever. And the idea being that if you don't hear no frequently, you're not asking for enough stuff. And you can think about that like, you know, just kind of the shit that we fill our houses with and the shit that we fill our lives with. But it can also mean the opportunities that you try and take with your life that you're afraid to do. If you're not throwing out proposals, if you're not throwing out ideas, if you're not offering collaborations with people, they're not going to happen. Not having the opportunity for them to say, no, I don't want to do this, means that you don't have the opportunities for them to say yes. And when you're younger and you haven't been you know, bludgeoned by life for decades, you're usually a little more open to taking those risks. So, you know, Mark talked about his experience with storytelling. And I was thinking earlier today about, God, it's been probably 20 years ago at least. Well, my son's 22, who has been vibrating my phone for the last half hour. Hey, Dad, can I have some money? And there's been a constant question mark, like every 4 minutes. So this is distracting me too. But there's this place in near Olympia, Washington, called Wolf Haven. And I don't even know if it's still there, but it was a place where, like, let's say someone found somebody was illegally keeping a wolf as a pet. And they live somewhere where that's illegal, and I think that's illegal just about everywhere. But and they wouldn't have anything anywhere to take it. These people had created this haven for wolves, hence Wolf Haven, the name. And they would put them there, or if there were problem wolves, you know, in some outlying area that they could move. So that it was just this big kind of farm with these wolves, and you could go there, and they had this thing called a howl-in, and it was this event where you would go, and there was like all these bleachers and logs for you to sit on and a big fire. And I went to this one time, and there was this guy there who was a storyteller, kind of like in the old tradition, whether, you know, like in Europe, the skalds and the bards that would travel around telling these stories. And this guy was doing kind of the same thing, but he had these masks that he made, and he was telling like trickster tales, and he would kind of put this mask on and he would kind of act out. It would, like, he would become these characters in these old stories he was telling. And I thought, that's awesome. You know, I would love to do something like that. And as this ends and you've got this guy in the fire and the smoke, the last thing they would do with these howl-ins is the people who ran the place would lead everybody to just start, you know, just make the wolf howl sound that you would make if you were a kid playing out in the yard. And this, you know, off in the distance, all the wolves that were in the pens in the open areas would start to howl as well. And that was something that was made a profound impact on me. And I always thought, you know, I want to see one someday. So, you know, going back to not being afraid to ask things, I decided that I was going to ask the guy who runs this thing. I was going to make like I was a journalist writing a story about Wolf Haven. So I had the opportunity to interview the guy, and I got to see the wolves, and I interviewed the biologist that they had on site, and I wrote just this most awful article that I submitted to Bugle magazine at the time, who, you know, that's the Elk Foundation's magazine, and this is like 1991, maybe 1990, so we're deep in the early days of Smoke a Pack a Day, you know, at being, let's smoke a pack of wolves, get it, the bumper sticker. So not the best place to send a terrible article about how great wolves are. So, you know, years pass. I start writing, doing some things. Reach a period in my life where I'm really not making those questions to be told no, and so I'm certainly not getting any yeses. And Julia moves here. We get married. We start doing a lot of creative stuff together. You know, she provides a lot of encouragement for me to actually go out and reach out and do these things, which really don't come that easy to me. Flashback about a month ago, and I see for the upcoming book festival that this guy, John Valiant, who wrote this book, The Tiger, and it's the story of this man-eating tiger in Far East Russia in the late 1990s, was terrorizing this village. And his book had been selected to be this year's first year reads for the university program. And I saw it on Instagram from Fact and Fiction, and my studio is right across the street from Fact and Fiction. So I ran down and I determined this is not like April Fool's Day or something. This is really happening. So that started a process where I found out how to get a hold of John. I immediately contacted the Independent. I said, this guy's a great writer. He's one of my favorites. I want to interview him. And one thing leads to another, and I'm on the phone interviewing John Valiant, who, you know, I'm kind of fanboying a little bit because, you know, I mean, I'm a fan first. As much as I like to write, as much as I like to create, it's in arenas of stuff that I love. And I'm a fan first. When I can't do it anymore, I'm still going to be a fan. So it's a big deal to me. And he tells me that he's got a reading in Bozeman the next night for his newest book. And he wants to know, you know, is there any shuttle between Missoula and Bozeman that I can take? And I said, yeah, I'll take you. And he said, okay, let's do it. So, you know, he had his event Wednesday night, had a couple things Thursday. I picked him up Thursday afternoon, and we headed for Bozeman. And on the way over, we see this big herd of about 30 or 40 pronghorn, and he's just freaking out about how cool it is to see all these pronghorn. I mean, and this is a guy who has walked the path through the frozen forest that this tiger killed and ate this guy. And just to see that enthusiasm from someone who has, you know, been out on the very most primitive, barbaric fringes of the natural world to still be able to maintain excitement for this rather, you know, common animal for those of us who live where we live. You know, it's both, you know, it's I think it's a testament to his character, but it's also kind of another one of those things where we think about we really live someplace special. So we go to his event. We spend last night. We stay at a friend of his, Kent Davis, and his wife, Anna. Kent is a writer whose book is coming out next week, who's actually here for the Festival of the Book as well, or Book Festival, whatever we call it now. And so we stay up late. We're up till like 3 o'clock in the morning drinking this, like, scotch. I didn't even know I liked scotch, and I, like, fucking love scotch now. We get up at 5:30 this morning, get ready to go so we can get to Yellowstone because we decide we're going to come back to Missoula to catch his flight and me to do this thing with the direct route from Bozeman to Missoula. And we're talking about all the things that we hope we see, and he's like, oh, I really want to see wolves. And I'm like, yeah, I want to see wolves. So we go there, we get to Gardner. We go through, we make a left, we talk to the people at the gate, and they say, well, no one's really seeing anything. And we say, well, we're going to go to the Lamar Valley because that's where it's most likely you're going to see wolves. We don't get halfway to the Lamar Valley, and there's all these cars pulled off with big spotting scopes. And we say, what's going on? They said, well, there were some wolves. There's a pack of 13 wolves out here that were seen earlier, and someone said they saw a couple of them a little while ago. We're just watching for them. So we're like, yeah, wolves, you know? So we go and we kind of find a good place and we walk up there and we weren't there. So we weren't in the park 20 minutes and we're eyeballing live wild wolves. And again, I said, John, I'm going to tell you right now, if we see these things, I'm probably going to cry. And he said, you know, I might too. So we made a pact that we wouldn't really tell anybody about it. So and I didn't, but now I'm all emotional about it. And you know, it's one of those things that we wouldn't have been there if we hadn't, you know, if I hadn't followed this, if you don't ask, you can't hear yes. And it just is an indication of how things just start to fall into place. If you just take that one small risk, which for me, you know, I'm not a guy who likes to hang out with strangers, you know, and for him, I think it was, again, a testament to him as to being willing to put himself out there and say, yeah, let's do this. Yeah, you might be a stranger, and you kind of look like a homeless guy, and that shirt looks like you've been wearing it every day for 3 years, but we'll do it. So, we did that. We made this big route through Yellowstone, and you know, we did pretty much everything you can do in, you know, one day possible in Yellowstone. And as stories go, I don't really know where this one is going. But other than it was, you know, I was going to tell a different story. And as I was sitting here, my gut just told me, talk about what is really exciting today. And what's exciting today is just taking that step to, you know, reach out to someone from that, you know, connection. I meet two other people. Oh yeah, and then there was this other dude that came to John's reading in Bozeman who I recognized from someone else's Instagram page, and he's a guy who he has two falcons and a golden eagle. that he hunts with. And he's like, dude, come back. We'll go hunting with my birds. So I'm like, yeah. And again, that's just one of those weird connections where, you know, I'm like, you look familiar. And he started talking about his birds. And it's like, hey, do you know this person? He's like, yeah, how do you know this person? I said, I don't, but it's just someone I follow. So now here's this guy, this other new connection. And, you know, I spend all this time with John Valiant, who's, you know, this author. And we're talking about people that we both admire. And yeah, I'll send you this guy's email address. And I'll send you that person's book. And it's just one of those things where, you know, 5 days ago, none of this was even on the plate. All I knew was that, you know, I'd interviewed this guy and we were maybe going to do these things. We didn't know how time was going to lay out. And then it just happens. And it's just one of those weird things. And like I said, as stories go, I know this is kind of weak and unprepared, but it's heartfelt. And I guess, you know, if these stories are supposed to have any kind of theme, you know, the theme is if you don't ask, they can't say yes. And if they say no, just keep asking. So that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Tell Us Something is proud to be fiscally sponsored by the Missoula Community Foundation, a 501c3 organization. Missoula Community Foundation has been providing leadership to Missoula nonprofits and inspiring long-term philanthropy in Missoula since 2007. For the good of Missoula, forever. MissoulaCommunityFoundation.org. Thank you for your support of live storytelling and local art. Our title sponsor, the Bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Montana Book Festival, a celebration of the written word. MontanaBookFestival.org. Haley Faust. Haley Faust is a graphic and media designer based in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. From concept to final design launch, Haley puts her heart and soul into your design project. HaleyFaust.com. Zoo City Apparel, custom screen printing. ZooCityApparel.BigCartel.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at CashForJunkersMusic.com. Rockin' Rudy's, your source for the best music, gifts, and more. Great music, great people. RockinRudy's.com. Podcast production by Nathan Zavolny of Missoula Soundworks, MissoulaSoundworks.com. And thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and to the storytellers, Karen McNenny, Chris Latray, Susan Maruka, and Josh Slotnick. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Check the website to find out how you can tell your own story and to learn about the themes for 2016. TellUsSomething.org.